So, we call this Feed Your Head.
Why do we call it Feed Your Head?
We call it Feed Your Heads because it's a lot about taking what we've learned from our kind of electronic dance community, whatever you want to call it, rave experience, and moving it into a little bit more of a broad community sense. A lot of them are just, you know, just a variation on the rave community, a creative community, or even we have Nonchalance here, which is a little bit more of a, well, they can talk about that, but they're a little bit, they go off a little bit more on the, well, their Oakland community rather than just strictly creative community. But they kind of make a really great link. So we've got Melissa Larson here from the Cloud Factory Collective.
Design
Collective, of course. Brandon Bloomquist from the New Humor Group, which you all got introduced to a little bit earlier this morning. Joel Fuller, who just showed his documentary here. He works with Polybian Productions. And Sean from Nonchalance. So I'll just leave it up to you guys, and yeah, I'll start with you and just go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good. And then we'll do some Q&A.
Sure.
Afterwards, if there is any. So, hi, how you doing? I'd like to start by reading the mission statement that our friend Sean Jacobson wrote for the Cloud Factory Design Collective, basically influenced by the community of the Design Collective in terms of how we wanted to represent ourselves in a poem, let's say. So our mission statement, not mine, Sean Jacobson's. And I think it really gives a good example of what we're doing together just here in the poem and how we came together and why. I do not remember the first beautiful thing I ever saw. Oh, and this, by the way, was also read at the first, was it shebang?
No.
It was second, so Shazam. This was read at Shazam, which was 3 years ago at Kokomo. I do not remember the first beautiful thing I ever saw. I do remember, as a child, seeing the whole world glisten with a newness and raw vitality that made my eyes ache to absorb it all, made my hands clench to clutch it, and my chest swells to unhitch its muscles in order to become it, a delirium of understanding. I have been pursuing it ever since. We are the Cloud Factory Design Collective. We are not marketeers whose careers are meant to steer you into the most profitable skew your good tastes could be aimed. No, people should not let themselves be so played. We are not about pose, kudos, applause, or entourages. We are artists, and this is not about game or fame or naming estranging body images, latest rages, or accessorizing the cages. From the hip and hypnotized, no, we do this because we love life. In all its myriads of visages, every bit of this is so glorious. We are privileged to witness this instant. Trends and tides are beside the point. This is born out of joy, creation because of elation. When lost amidst the blobs of fabric, the lace and tape and studs, created out of a love that beats in the blood with a thrum that is something greater. This endeavor is equally for your enjoyment as our celebration. We hope to share with you, truly beaming, a passion that is, in an ever-blooming delight, truly righteous, and the grist to live lifetimes. We align with no one, aside the general good of all, and want the ones in the populace to grow better than demographic statistics and marketing ploys. We only hope to share a joy that cannot be plotted or allotted, a slot in the marketeer's files. We offer our skills that you smile and be filled with the exuberance in which they created. I do not remember the first beautiful thing that I saw, but when I saw it, I saw that it was omnipresent in every shape, size, color, and splinter of diversity that makes us all so perfectly unique. Seek beauty, and it cannot be put down, for it is resounding throughout everything, ever present if you're only trying to see it. To what it is that drives us to growth, that shows itself in our strengths. Every moment we give thanks. And we were very, very honored and super proud to have him do that for us because it was really a smorgasbord of the Design Collective's thoughts and ideas in terms of what we wanted to, how we wanted to perceive ourselves to the public. We started out, I'll give you the story now. This is a story that I tell all of my friends about the Cloud Factory Design Collective. the story goes, about 5 years ago, at a Sunshine Biscuit Party Factory, Sunshine Biscuit Factory Party. How was that a tongue twister? If any of you know, that was a warehouse downtown Oakland, West Oakland, or East Oakland, rather, that had been around for a while, and several Cloud Factory people lived there, and we had lots of parties there. And so about five girls were hanging out in the after effects of the party one morning, totally enamored with ourselves and our clothes that we had made, and we're talking about perhaps doing this further and how we would do that. And I was I came into the conversation a little late in the game, and I said, why don't we just pick a date? Because we've been talking about this for a really long time, and it hasn't seemed to really manifest in any way except in thought. And so we walked, four of us or five of us walked over to a calendar, and we picked a date. And that was the start of the Design Collective. We, for the first 3 months, I sat in Salinas, or rather in Seaside, where I was living at the time, doing everything by myself. Like, how do we do this? I don't know. I've thrown a party before. I've helped out. But how do we put on a fashion show? This is really a new thing to me. So I didn't ask anybody for help, and I just sort of tried to, you know, figure it all out on my own. Well, I figured after 3 months that I couldn't do it on my own, and I put a plea out to the Cloud Factory list saying, I really want to do this. We picked a date. We've actually set, you know, a goal for ourselves. Now let's try and put this together. And so we started having our first few meetings. And, in fact, the first fashion show that we did put on probably took us about a year and a half to create. A lot of that was planning through email. Most of it was meeting each other once a week for a couple of months, then once a month after that. We probably had about 15 meetings to get this the Design Collective started and the first fashion show up and running. And when it did, it was really a true success. I feel that we pulled it off in just the most amazing ways, and was really very beautiful about it. Is it wasn't just about the clothes. It was about Radiant Atmospheres doing lighting for us. It was about Terry Asioko with Vibration doing visuals and Mike McGursey doing visuals for us and putting all that together. And it wasn't just about the clothes. It was an all-encompassing multimedia, you know, event at this point, sort of around fashion, but not necessarily for fashion. And that's how we've evolved at this point. And we've had three fashion shows, and we've had two Naughty Santa productions, which we didn't actually do the production for, but we were the entertainment, let's say, for the winter crafts fair that Naughty Santa is. And we've also done a show at the DNA, most recently at the DNA, for a little event that was going on there. And I'm leaving somebody out. Anon Salon. Right. Hi, Janessa. And so so that's where we're at with the Design Collective. And it's grown and become magical. Yes, thank you, Brandon. It has become very magical. It stimulates me all the time in ways that I can't even really express verbally. And we just recently had a meeting, our first meeting for our spring show, which I'll announce now will be, I won't tell you where it is, it's a little secret, and what I will say is that it's Mother's Day Eve, so May 10th, be prepared and watch your calendars if you'd like to see some extraordinary production happen before your eyes, because it will be extraordinary, I guarantee it. The first show, I have to say, one thing that was really magical for me at the very first show, aside from the fact that I cried the whole night, but if you know me, you know that that's pretty much what I do for a living. I cry because everything is so beautiful. What? What was that? I missed it. Oh, you in joy from your friends and support. It's a beautiful thing. But one of the things that really just floated my boat the first show was that Monty Luke showed up. For I think it was either Monty's or Ethan's birthday. No, it was Ethan's birthday, Ethan Miller's birthday. Monty Luke showed up, which I thought he wasn't going to. In fact, months beforehand, I kept pushing him, please go, please go. He's like, no, I got to work in the studio that night. I'm like, no, come on, you don't have to work in the studio. You're working in the studio all the time. You're always making music. Just come to the show. It's our first one. Be supportive. He ended up showing up about halfway through the night, and I just started to cry when I saw him. Tony from, come on, help me out here. What's his last name? Okay, well, never mind. But he started crying, and I'm watching this guy cry. Big guy, you know, whatever. He's Ben, and he's crying watching the show going, God, this is just so beautiful. And he was expressing the emotions that I was always, you know, had been expressing that whole day. And so it was fabulous. And actually, Tina here, Christina, helped us out quite a bit that day. No, you didn't cry, but but you saved a few people by taking them to the bar and getting them really, really drunk who were really scared. They were super scared for modeling without tops on, you know. And so she took them and handled that really well, very diplomatic about it. So, yeah, that's the Design Collective. There's, I'm sure, a lot more that I'm missing, but we'll take some questions and hopefully some of that stuff can get stimulated.
Yeah.
Brandon.
Hi, I'm Brandon, and I work with the New Humor Group based here in Oakland right now. And we are, you know, some old Cloud Factory heads that kind of met in Monterey around the time the Cloud Factory was forming and started doing, like, events together and stuff like that, and found that we all were really, really kind of cynical and fairly sarcastic, and, you know, not during the party, but before and after, we were just kind of fucked up senses of humor and really into just messed up shit, and we started, I don't know, we started, like, hanging out. I mean, that was the basis of it all, was, like, you know, we'd always hang out together as a group, and we'd do these, it was like when we wanted to do an event, when it was some, you know, something came up, we kind of made up our own holidays and then would have an event, and it would just be like, well, we have sound and all this stuff, and then records and DJs, and it was a party, you know. And but in the off time, not hang, when we were just hanging out, we would, like, take a video camera and lock up in a bedroom for, like, a week and, like, smoke an ounce of pot and improvise a movie that was just totally weird and fucked up. And like, you know, as things, time
Theater de Lego, yeah.
We kind of discovered that other people would enjoy it as well that weren't necessarily in the room all high. And so we did that. I think one night we ended up coming up with the New Humor Group. We were all going out into the swamp in Monterey for some moon thing, and it just wasn't happening. It wasn't happening. We were all sitting there, and we just started kind of going, telling these little jokes to each other, like, is Don Spence here? In the other room, well, somebody said, like, well, what's 4 feet tall and ends with S? And then somebody else said, little DS. And then everyone was like, Duke, hello. And then that was pretty much it. We were like, these are new jokes and it's new humor, so we're going to call ourselves New Humor Group. It's, you know, it's like, it was different. And, like, then we did a TV show down in Monterey for a while, too. It kind of pooled on all of our talents and, you know, through doing stuff with, like, Cloud Factory and junk, it kind of became evident the whole, you know, if you're going to do a kind of entertainment, then you might as well just do it and not worry about, like, getting a club to show your DJs or anything. You know, you just start doing it, and then people will come. And thankfully, you know, like, a lot of us, we have a lot of skills of, like, getting people out to come to things and how to organize something, because you just kind of all pick it up via osmosis, because it just so happens that that's your process for doing, like, a party,
right.
You know. It's easy for us to do it, you know, do an event now as it is for, like, a frat boy who is used to doing keggers to have a martini party on his yacht. You know, it's just like, we've got to call Dave and get the gin, and we've got to get some jazz in there, and it's different because we're into different stuff. But, like, you know, it all comes from, like, being friends and getting together and learning how to do stuff and then branching out into specific things, because it's like, I've never been a raver. And most people I know from back then, I'm saying, like, it's like, not a raver, but, like, always doing parties, always showing up, but never, this is what I am, you know. I'm a comedian and a lot of other things. It's not just, like, about that, you know. And it's, like, cool, because it's, like, through doing all this stuff that we've done, but also not defining ourselves or niching ourselves, you know. It's like, we can do things, and it's all-encompassing, you know. Bring it back to this form of entertainment that you've developed and stuff like that, with people coming together. And then it's like, well, you can have, like, DJs and then comedy as well, and, like, go out and get things from your own personal endeavor and what you're into and bring them back together to form, like, you know, like Melissa and the CFDC people have done. You know, take your interests and kind of route them back in. And I think it's really cool that it's kind of at the point where, you know, there are fashion shows going on, and where, like, the people that are, like, Radiant Atmospheres that do lights are also doing other things. They're doing installations at Burning Man, and it's all kind of, like, coming back. So, yeah, I mean, we kind of, we branched out, and, of course, there was Gypsy, which was kind of a new humor thing, like, just, like, performance, random performances and stuff. But now we're doing improv, and we're actually, like, taking that DIY aspect of the production, and also a natural, like, way more organic formation where we never sat down really and were like, okay, we're going to be doing this type of stuff. We're going to start a comedy troupe and we're going to go audition people. It was kind of like, well, we all started doing it and then it just happened and it was totally organic and there was a good flow to it. So, yeah, you can check out our website at newhumorgroup.com. And we're going to be performing long-form improv for you tonight with Sigrid over there and I think Mark. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. If you have any questions, you can bounce them at me in question session. And I'm going to pass the mic.
Hi, I'm Joel.
Hi, Joel.
Glad to be here. No, actually, I would like to thank everyone for inviting me here and letting me show the film. I have to apologize because I've been working on a project up until a few minutes ago, and I still have to actually go back and finish it, so I have to kind of leave right away. But I was going to do a little presentation about sort of based on a book I'm reading called The Social Life of Information. I don't know if anybody read that book. Social Life of Information. It's written by John Seeley Brown, I believe that's his name, and he's a senior research scientist at Xerox PARC. And you would think that, you know, he would be very pro-technology and pro-information and things like that, and the book is just very insightful and it talks about specifically info enthusiasts, these people he calls info enthusiasts, and they, well, just summarizing, they talk about, those types of people talk more about information versus reality of knowledge and how these things are different, primarily. All the information is valuable, knowledge is really what is useful. How much it has to do with
mention like dollars or whatever, you know, just isolated objects, you know, and then kind of not having to use a traditional venue or a real, like a regular space for what you're doing, just doing it and taking what you do every day and putting that into reality, which is, that's when art is no longer art, it is just expression of you as a person, which is like whatever you do. So it's not like you have to sit there with like an artist crown or what have you, you know, do that and be part of that whole machine, but you can just be a person, you know, which is much better. And then crying. we know it's good to cry. So, not
Thanks.
You know, I mean, especially these days, it's a good time to cry, but you probably wouldn't stop. if you started, at least not for a while. So basically what we do, we're all East Bay, you know, born, bred, or whatever, mostly in Oakland, tending in San Francisco, you know, that's what we did. and basically what we saw going on was Oakland being taken over by people moving to the Bay Area for tech jobs to take advantage of the cheap rent, which has been created by sort of racial the racial politics that have, you know, been going on in this country for so long and created white flight in the 60s and 70s, which is why Oakland is largely black population. The black population came here to take advantage of the jobs of Oakland in World War II, because these companies were seeing black people as, we can use them as a workforce now, you know, or in the war, is another situation. So anyway, growing up in Oakland is a lot different than kids moving here to Oakland to take advantage of the cheap rent, and it's, you know, been marketed as a hip place to live by various magazines and newspapers and whatnot, or, you know, San Francisco is this and that. But the native population, you know, people who are actually from here, it's much different. And living in this country with the mindset that most people have gives you sort of a, regardless of your real politics, gives you sort of a exploitative, colonialist attitude. And regardless of who it is, really, like, you just come in, you take advantage of what's going on, and do that, and then, yeah, well, I'm going to split once I find a hipper town, or I have enough money to move to New York, or Berlin, or whatever, you know. So, for Oakland, being next to Berkeley and San Francisco, which have been always looked shined on more, we're just a shit on city, basically, and that's the roots of what this city is. And so basically we're trying to do research and understand what the history of the city is and bring that to other people who wouldn't normally be exposed to those ideas, from, you know, going back as far as Jack London to, you know, as recent as what's going on now with Jerry Brown and his whole regime. And, you know, things in the interim periods like the Black Panther Party, you know, whatever, all this sort of thing. So, what we do, currently, we started off with a poster campaign, which was documenting famous people who are from Oakland, from everyone, and people who have spent a larger period of time here, like Bruce Lee had a dojo in downtown Oakland, for example, or Dream, who got killed, one of the best graffiti artists in history. You know, there's various people. Clint Eastwood went to Open Tech, you know, with Tom Hanks with the Skyline. So shit like that, you know, you really know, it's good to know these things. It's good to know the context of the city that you're in.
Didn't Journey come out of the out of Oakland?
I don't think Journey, yeah.
Oh.
I mean, the Doobie Brothers have Oakland's Tower of Power. You know, yeah, Too Short.
Right.
MC Hammer. MC on Thursday nights. you know, and it's like, so there's some grasping at straws on some ends, you know, like, can we, that's good, see, she's taking advantage, she knows she has nothing to say yet,
but, she's got something to say, all right, yeah, she does,
anyway, so yeah, there's not like this tremendous, you know, we're not like these East Coast cities that have spawned, you know, tons of cats. Because Oakland hasn't been here that long. It's like
right.
150th birthday. And it's always been a shadowed town, but it's got a cool history, and there's a lot to draw on. There's a lot of crazy, dramatic incidents that have gone on here. And the politics are pretty intense, and we're the biggest port on the west coast of the United States. So that in itself is a huge element as far as intrigue goes. So anyway, we have a poster series. Then we started doing drive-ins at the end of every month, free in downtown Oakland. And we just tried to show things that were shot locally, have some sort of perspective on reality today, like whatever politics. We show like Guerrilla News Network stuff, we show this stuff, we show their tape actually.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And, you know, so people are like, oh, I want to show my shit. And you say, okay, well, why don't you give me a tape? And they'll be like, you know, we'll check it out. It's all right, we'll put it on. And, you know, we search out our own stuff, like Space is the Place, Sun Ra's movie. We show The Mac, which is shot in Oakland. It's a great movie if you haven't seen. We showed some Hell's Angels movies. Because, you know, Hell's Angels used to be based out here. At least the Oakland Hell's Angels are the most infamous with some larger of these characters. We showed Black Panther stuff, you know, because that all came out of here.
Right.
And then we've done other stuff, like we had a whole night of like stop animation, weird European stuff that's just insane that you're not gonna see anywhere, you know, not even DC, because it's not even, you know, it's not like the morbid weird of those, what are those brothers quiet, is that those guys? It's not like that, it's just, it's on crack. Show stuff is totally insane. Or things that have to do with like the urban landscape that we'll show Akira, or whatever, you know, things that try to get that youthful, hot-blooded rowdiness in the people, which is good.
Really,
oh yeah, we show Repo Man, which is, you know, I come from the punk scene, so that is an important point. Yeah, and so anyway, we're starting up again with the drive-ins in May, I think. We might do a little bit earlier, depending on the things. And we're doing a few nights, and if anyone has video that they want us to show,
I was gonna.
Should we wait? Keep the discussion fresh.
Well, I'm glad actually that I went first, because listening to you three really stimulated some things for me. And one of the things that I neglected to say about the CFDC was that it's not. Well, I did say that it's not about fashion, but ultimately we really want to try and bring as many new creative aspects of this community as possible to make it a better visual, a more open venue for things to happen. Granted, the fashion is, you know, the probably focal point at one point, but we really want to try and bring more. And so it's not just, you know, a set, structured sort of, you know, six people who are designers for the fashion show. It's more like, okay, you want to do it this year? Great. You've got some great stuff. Or we find people all the time. There's actually a woman in the building. Her name is Sharon... Yes, Olson, and she does something called Glad Rags to Gowns is what it is. Okay, good. I got that straight. And she basically, it was something that I found recently, and I wanted to get her involved in it just because it's something very different than what the rest of us are doing. Allison does some really amazing things for circus performers. And stilt walkers, and so there's really a mix of community aspects going into just the fashion show itself. Another thing that I wanted to say was that it's sort of like, you know, we're all sort of in, well, not maybe all of us, I'll speak for the majority of people that I know here anyway, is that we're this incestuous bunch in that we, you know, spawn from Cloud Factory, friends and family, this, that, or the other, and we've all come together and gone to each other's events and know each other and hang out with each other, so we can't just catalog ourselves as, yes, I'm so-and-so with the so-and-so. We're sort of like, yeah, we're with everything and everybody, and we know each other. Well, doing the fashion show and New Humor Group and things, it's like we're taking that element but putting it into a more creative analogy of it. So it's not, you know, we're just physically people being incestual in our communities, but it's also our creativity being that way. So we're not just taking the New Humor Group to, I know it sounds really gross, right? But no, it's like, you know, the fashion show just doesn't do the fashion show. We actually go off and do other things with other people, and we don't always come together as a group. You know, Liz and Sig could have their own little fashion show and go do it somewhere else and call themselves the CFDC, you know, or that would be their little moniker or whatever, and we'd be totally fine with that. It's a wonderful thing. We encourage that kind of crossbreeding and pollinating.
That was how we danced, you know, or maybe something like that.
But it was definitely an amazing collaboration of minds,
yeah,
you know, working. It all does. It just twists together, and I think that that's a big part of why, at least I think I'm here, is to, you know, elaborate more on that and, you know, show that it's a good thing. We need to do this more. Cross-pollinate. Yes. Lacking, missing. I think we're still lacking a cohesive form of these creative notions that are happening in our communities all over the place. I think that it's been amazing coming together with people. It's a really powerful, energetic thing to come together with people and do different things for different reasons and not just have a party for music. And I don't think enough people are doing that within the community. Like, I wouldn't care so much if it wasn't me doing it, but, you know, maybe a local gardener, a community gardener getting together with, yay, Kelsey, a local gardener getting together with some other, you know, residential community aspect and getting together and doing some sort of thing together. There's not enough neighbor aspect for me in our communities.
I'd like to see more autonomy. Be more autonomous from the society that we're forced to do our art in, within. And I'm not saying like commune or anything like that. I'm just saying, you know, create it so that we can autonomously continue to do it. And as we age, continue to put our efforts into it, because, you know, they had some pretty cool shit going on in the 60s, but a lot of that is diffused into, you know, kitsch now. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that people are going to start settling down and chilling out and stuff like that. And but if you have the autonomy, if you can say, you know, like, if you can get your funding and continue to bust out your film stuff, your documentary stuff, you know, then you can stay to that, you know, and not have to, you know, do something that you don't want to do to survive and stuff like that.
But yeah.
We're not making money doing the improv, but at the same time, we also want to go on a tour, you know, and therefore we end up working for the man and taking these kind of... It's just an audio. But, I'd like to see it become like more of an effort towards acquiring our more autonomy for the scene to not have to diffuse. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
also about I don't work on
as far as like, creatively, everyone is exploring. That so much shit has been explored at this point. Painters and every kind of artist is doing everything at this point in time. I think that's kind of like a defining element of today, 2003, is that everything is being done simultaneously. There's no real. There's trends and currents and whatnot, but not really. There's not a real strong anything. Every new subculture that pops up is like a blend of old ones. You know, like, you got rap metal is one of the bigger things that's cropped up in recent times, or the whole, hip-hop is just sort of evolved. Keeps on pulling in different periods of the invention of the sampler and the sort of postmodern angle really takes innovation is no longer new. It's now recontextualizing other things, pulling them into giving something a new spin, which I think can only last for not that much longer. I think that sort of information overload symptom that we're suffering from right now is going to become old. There's going to be a big move to rebuild our country in a way that makes sense cards now, it really feels like kind of a cop-out, because when you think about how much work goes into that and how many things get built only to be taken away. And it's all out in the desert. And who sees it besides the people who come to Burning Man? You know, and is that the audience? Because that's not an audience. You know, it's not about audience or Burning Man. It's about participation. You know, but as far as, like, where the world is today, it's that kind of shit. Audience participation in art and everything needs to be in the city and where people live, where regular people live, not just subcultural cats. And it needs to be part of the bigger picture and the more complicated picture, instead of just escapist participation, you know, like that sort of thing. So that's the next step, basically, to bring it all back.
Maybe one more question.
It sounds like actually this discussion could probably continue for a long time, and a lot of the questions that we have, I for me anyways, is a little bit more philosophical and can relate to just kind of the reasons why we do art and how we communicate that way.
Yeah.
But I think we should just thank everybody here for now, and we're gonna have probably about 5 minutes, and you guys can, you know, come up and talk to whomever and answer some questions. But and also the communication lounge tonight, we can continue some of these discussions.
But
so we're gonna have to end it here. But I wanted to thank everybody.
Thank you, Carly.